Okay, that's Tom Neary, tape 6. You were talking about the start of the Battle of Boabu, Tom, in the forest.
They moved through the forest. The pioneers going there, they were clearing the edges and nicks to make way for us along with the intelligence section laying the tapes also. Now, the officer in charge of the pioneers came along and he saw this German, I understand, shaking his blanket. So this, he must have seen when he went, I don't believe it or not, but he went to the dugout and he went in the dugout. So our first charge shot, I think, and he went there and he captured all of it in the dugout. And not only were six Germans trolling this big dugout, but all, there was also six Spandau machine guns. So they captured the lot. And if they hadn't captured the lot, then there wouldn't have been any Boabu.
Yeah.
So that was a damn good job that was done. So we plodded on through the forest till eventually we came about 11:45 it would be at this end of the edge of the forest and this third class road running across the front. Now, as you looked out, on the right as we were, was all typical Bacard's country, small field and ethnic edges, and on the left side it finished. And then it was all that cornfield about waist high. Lovely summer's day, and it was warm, 11:45 approximately. So when we got to the start line, I remember D Company coming up, and of course the divisional commander, Cole Ross, had a business bonnet idea about having infantry on bikes, one company. Not a crap.
Mm.
So D Company, I remember them putting the bikes all steady together along the leading them to the ridge to start again. Down come the shell fire. But before that happened, we could hear the battle going over on the right flank.
This is a Fresnay.
Yeah, it still hadn't been two by the Royal Auxiliaries. But of course the only one thing to do was in the shell trap, they're coming down, runners all over. So off we go across the road, over the edges, the platoons, four platoons leading, and platoons and also a vehicle to our left in the cornfields, and further over to our left, of course, would be company. The order of battle was that the forward company, right forward company A company, left forward company B company, Charlie company behind A, D company along the battalion quarters, and support company.
Which company were you with at this stage, Tom?
I was single attached to A company under Major Griffin.
Okay.
The second commander was called Captain Leacock.
Yep.
The Channel Islands. So we advanced, and I could see them. I was only 50 yards, and I could see the company going forward through the cornfields and over the edges. But on the net, the colonel had been asking, "Where are the tanks? No tanks inside. Don't worry, carry on." Well, when we got about 50 yards under, out come the tanks waddling out of the wood, and they followed us up behind.
What, were they Churchills or were they?
Churchill tanks, yeah. The main thing is it defied at the edge where they had to have the gun over already.
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
So we stopped that and got the tanks, so pretty good liaison between us. So we advanced from field to field and you could see them. The motor bombs were dropping in the shell and you could see the dust of that dollars. And you advance and the stretch bears were running amongst them, putting them into a safety in a little ditch they were in, so they could be attended to.
Well, you remember seeing the bodies, the soldiers, the English soldiers?
Yeah.
Your soldiers?
Yeah. They down to come and they go, you know. It was like a dream, you see. You see it, and it's just like, I can only say how I am.
Yes.
It was a scorching day hot. But we advanced, and as we advanced, of course, out came the prisoners in the slit trenches. And so, Rusky.
Yeah.
Very Rusky.
Yeah.
And kept that, and then further back.
Mm-hmm.
As we advanced further, Coles.
Yeah.
Going past them, we said, the forward lads had missed it. There's men in them dugouts there. So Captain Leacock said, "Oh, it's a cloud." Of course, it didn't come out, so they got grenades to. They never come out.
Mm-hmm.
So as we advanced machine gun fire was coming from the right flank, which was from Fresnay,
yeah.
I mean Duke.
So if I let me just get bearings here. So you're the first battalion East Lancs at that stage are forward of any other battalion.
The Canadians had not caught up to us on the left flank.
Yeah.
So both flanks were wide open.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate when them guns being captured as six spandrels that we would have been able to never got there, So we advanced, and as we advanced coming up to the outskirts of Waterloo, the fighting increased more. So there was good fighting, skirmishing going on. So when we got in through the broad part left inclined, and it brought us into the village. So we were again what I thought was a church, which was an hospice, as it turns out, and there was this big high wall. Now, B Company was further over, taking the left of the hill, taking the right. So when we got up there, maybe when we got to the strongest wall, we had a quick discussion, stuff was flying about. They said, cut their quarters, and one platoon would go forward, and the other platoon would go left around the church that way.
Yeah.
So we advanced, and as we advanced, we come to these houses that were facing, went in the houses, were full of jerry rooming, and we cleared them up. Stretch of air again, well, so Eastwood got some of them weren't so bad to help stretch of air some of our lads. And then we cleared that area, which is close in, and then made a decision, decided we could go around the right flank, missing the centre of the village out, to get to the main, the two main roads we had to take, leading out of Waterloo, and we took the right-hand road, which was from the headquarters.
Yeah.
We went right round through the orchard, right, coming to the back of the house in this barn. We get into there, and this is South House, and the sliding door that went into the house, and then just beyond that was the passage in the barn. Mm. Anyhow, I have the headset on, and I'm stood in this doorway of the barn, of the house, and the outhouse is on the right angle, and about 2 inches off the front, the dust coming off the wall, and I thought, how's that dust? Because I have the headsets on, and somebody, when I looked to my left, who'd come up with, just managed to get up with us then, was a forward observation officer with his carrier, and he's, would be either 19 or 22 set. They'd been beside Tommy Broome. He got shot through the head and through the chest, of course, and he not to die or what happened. And I think it was maybe one guy to me with the headset through the door.
So just to recap on that, so what was happening there, Tom, if I've got it right, is that you had this headset on. You saw dust coming off the wall 2 inches in front of your nose.
Yeah.
And you didn't know what that was.
No, it was dust, you know, that concentration on what I was doing, you know. But the radio communication, I couldn't hear anything, only what was going on the radio. And the wires, as we call it. And they dragged me in, of course, fairly obviously, the machine gun was in the wall.
Yeah.
So, dragged us in, then the counter attack.
How many were killed or wounded there, do you know, Tom?
There was either three or four.
Yeah.
So, what they did with them, they put them on the carrier and they drove right across to take them back to. Getting to the RAP.
Yes.
So I know that some were shot through the head because I've seen them.
Sure.
Some were shot through the chest.
Sure.
And it missed me by a couple of inches.
Yeah.
So it was an excellent shot to ever did it. Now, obviously, very obviously, with a machine gun, now whether it was from a tank or what, I don't know.
Well, there were tanks in the village, were there?
Oh, yeah. There were six tanks going down the main road.
Yeah.
So the road that we were on then was the road that was going into Chesney.
Mm-hmm.
So, alarm, tanks. So I took the headsets off and I dashed around and down this alleyway, and there this very big panzer tank with the officer out of his turret right outside down this alleyway. So we shot at him with a rifle, he said, no pierces at that point. He's graceful, so he pulled them away they went. So that is where one of the platoons of A Company disappeared. They were shot up by the tanks, and of course, the platoon sergeant Crossley was killed. I don't know which found of him, but he buried it in Bundle. Tommy Alston, an old dear friend of mine, and all, they were called for a joint train together. Come from Colm, you know, found it. Mm. He also was Eastwood came in train, not the old mate, and he said, "Can you recognise this, Tommy?" I said, "What?" "So this cigarette lighter." I said, "You know, I have no idea." I said, "Who it is?" He said, "Who always found his one leg in the cigarette lighter?"
So whoever that was, I guess, hit by something solid.
Yeah, it was a tank fire.
Yeah.
So the tank came coming in there with the infantry also coming down the edges. So a little signal of the carbines went up in the loft, the rain gun. And he's firing down the edges as they're coming down at them. As fellas, our fellas from the other platoon to the side of the road, that'd be all open fire. So there was an old battle at 30 yards, but they were killed. So they had to withdraw. So then a few minutes after, down comes a week before that happened, down comes a motorbike and sidecar. Right in back to where we were, on the edge of the sea, and then it stopped a bit. Well, we shot them up.
Mm.
So they lay dead in the road, and there's an officer, a German officer, and the driver, the motorbike driver, and the sidecar, so they lay in the road. So the car wheels went out, and he got his cases off him, which had maps in and all sorts. Went to RHQ. He also took his revolvers off them, and various things, which he sold to the Canadians when they came through the day after.
Yeah.
There was a Walther revolver and a Beretta. Anyhow, it went quiet from there.
Was there much of that that went on, Tom? That you know, souvenir hunting, I suppose that is, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Both did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never myself hard.
No.
I just didn't want to dress it. Doing my job. So, but the infantry lads, you could understand, they did have seen four watches on the.
Yeah.
But these had took off prisoners, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, he quietened down. The communication delayed the line up to Royal Boo from RHQ for the back. And we test the line, so the line went this. It disconnected, dropped the north, and can't get no answer. So I said to Dickie Lee, he's no longer got killed, open the 18 set up and try and get in touch with them there. Because if the line goes there, so you open up communication the way you can, and really, no answer, not a thing. So the Cargis and me went out dark in the line, laying the line. Checking the line through his fingers right down, but we went a long, long way, I don't know how far I went. But you're responsible for your own area when you're a company. Nothing wrong with the line, so I just went to RHQ. No communication by wireless. Eventually, I was off to it. He found it, we had it.
Yeah.
So, in that time, of course, Horsey must have been killed, and the signal officer came to us from Templeton Beacon. He was Templeton Beacon, the control Hawkins.
Yeah.
The command. So, anyhow, we consolidated. Walbu was ours. Day following, the Canadians went to us. We're there about 3 days or something like that, I think that meant. And we moved off by a bus.
Yeah. Just before you move off there, Tom, if I just stop again, because Wildboo, you mentioned there that you didn't have any piats to fire at the tanks.
No.
And I heard you say something about disgusting, or much to say it shouldn't have been.
No.
So you should have had piats at that stage.
According to what I understood that the commander said, they were promising things to carry, of course, in the attack.
Yeah.
And they were on the company jeep. Anyway, but 30, 20 pounds, 30 pounds. And the bombs were like a bomb that you carry in cases. And you put them into the pit, the big spring, you get the cock. And if you fired it, you said 50 yards, you want to be down to really 20 yards, because if you miss, that'd be a lot. So the spring propelled it forward, and you hit the tank. It burst on the tank, and I've seen it do it. To go through, and the hole would be about as big as an old Avenue. but inside the busted.
Is that right? It makes a small entry hole,
yeah,
but it explodes inside the vehicle.
3 or 4 inches of steel.
Really?
And it bust inside, you see.
Really?
If they weren't all killed, they'd get out of it, wouldn't they?
I just wonder how that would, how it does that, because it's not being shot with any great power, is it? Fired with any great power?
The spring would be approximately 2.5 inches in diameter.
Hmm.
And what you did with it, and you had a little time with it behind your shoulder, you got that little thing and you pulled it.
Yeah.
And you cocked it and spring.
You're showing me a motion there, like a crossbow.
That's
motion.
Right, yeah.
Cocking a crossbow.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how, and then of course. It had a hole at the top and a ring at the front, and you just cleaned the bomb in.
Mm.
The bomb had a point on it, and a thing at the back of it, and you fired it, so it wasn't an explosion, it was just the velocity from the pressure of the spring.
Yeah.
But I knew somebody who, when he first got him, he caught him in the jaw and he cocked him, he knocked him unconscious.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but those Piats, although you didn't have the Piats, there was, as far as you know, there was nobody in the company with Piats that you saw around there.
Nobody had it.
No.
So according to what Mary Griffin said was that was the rules, that the Piats travelled, unfortunately, whether they saw or not, in the company jeep. But ever after that, it was carried by the company.
Oh, I see. So the change of tactic after that.
That's right.
Yeah.
But. Later on, when Charlie came in, son Charlie Hatton, not one of the tanks that would appear, so he must have got it there.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so when the battle finished, I thought we laid this line on this all night, no connection. So eventually it came through again, we were there 3 or 4 days, and then we moved off, and we moved up to further going towards Falaise, and it was...
I know there's a village there called Leffard or something.
Yeah, so we went to Leffard. Now, they had they called it Leffard Order of March. Now they did it, this arrangement was, that the leading company, then advanced platoon, leading company, company jeeps, trafficking order, follow-up company, and then it all sets out like this.
Mm.
So we get going towards the harbour. We got off and we went with the route march going up to the Fard. So when we went to the Fard, let me get this right here, we went through the Fard going to go to Narana Bay.
Yes.
The place was Narana Bay.
Yeah.
We got so far, doing well, and we come again some resistance again across the road at the Fard Bay. At the Fard. So, at around the bay, excuse me, we marched out to the Fard under such formation till we got to around the bay.
Yeah.
There we come up again a bit of resistance, but unfortunately, I don't know why, it said, oh, we turned to the Fard. So we had, don't know why, we cleared the message, but we had to go back to the Fard.
Mm.
So it was going later on, and dusk was going to start to fall, so we had to go back to where we started from, to the Fard. But on the way back, the heavens opened and it threw it down, we were saturated.
Mm.
So when we get into the Fard, along with these Lancashire, with some other unit, one big mix up in the centre, the cell was in the place. But it was sorted out by Captain Molly, the transport officer. The rest of it got us into the houses and we stayed there for the night.
Yeah, because it's presumably Le Fard is only a small village.
Yeah. But there were enough to get you housed.
And there was a lot of confusion in there because it was not just you in there, but there were other units there as well.
There before us.
Yeah.
And a lot of roads and...
Yeah.
And it was slowly down.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we're going to cover there. Morning we're off again. They marched off. The cleaning company, if my memory is right, was Charlie Company, followed by D Company, followed by A Company, followed by B. So when they get again to Narana Bay, this little river there, the action was, and of course there was resistance, so to stop that. What they decided the plan was, the officers at Charlie Company would attack from the front, or another way around, and Dudley Company would go around to the right flank, and they come in two ways with a short artillery programme in. So they took and around the bay with very little,
yes,
you know, casualties. Somewhere on there. And of course, in that place, there was quite a few wounded and civilian killed.
Yeah. It's around that area, because I've been back to that area since.
In
yeah, and I know that it looks to me, an untrained eye person that doesn't know about these things, but it would look a difficult place to take, because there's a lot of good countryside there for people defending the place.
Yeah. Well, then you do get very much trouble.
Yeah.
Proper then, the next order was to take a place called Mier, which is under the hamlet. But you went along this road, and we sort of slowed along this road. Well, as we got out and around the bay, A Company was on his bit of a hollow down, and he had to come up to it to get onto the main road. Now, along this main road, eventually, came the tanks and the armoured cars and all the different vehicles along this road, and in front of us was B Company. So it was the attack had to go in. So B Company's on this road in two formation, and then followed by A Company. Charlie Company and D Company was back, further back in the bay.
Yeah.
So we advanced along this road, not for very long. Then there's a hedge which covered us.
Right? Yeah.
On our other side was the armoured cars and the tanks above us.
Yeah.
So we're going up, we're going along there. We weren't moving, waiting for the forward company to go into attack, and we followed. One after another, they blew up. That meant to say they were hit by gunfire.
The tanks were.
Yeah. One after another, they were blowing up, set a fire, blowing up, all that loose confusion. So the other one. Get on, get going, these tanks, on like anything else. So A Company, B Company's going forward, A Company's behind. So we're going on this road, belting on this road, all the transport's going up in flames, they're no use to us, all we can get out of it. But being lower behind the edge, there isn't the tanks, I've got to come back in.
Yeah.
So with no casualties there, so we're running out the bloody clappers. He gets to where it was Miette. There's a bridge across this small river, a small stream. So the thing, the company went across the stream, through this farmyard, up the hill, right, where it was all rough country. We followed, A Company followed them, but Major Griffin said, not across the bridge, he said, we shall run across through the river. So we run through this little river, up into the farmyard, and we established headquarters. But as we went across the river, he said, singular, because I'm behind you,
yeah.
I said, yes, sir. Oh, fine. So we got across there into the yard and set the signal, the wires up on this ledge inside this barn. Well, there's a real hot battle going on. As you're going up through the rough ground, B Company is getting fired on with open sights with the guns.
Yeah.
And A Company's following them. So all the officers with B Company were casualties. And a lot of B Company, and our fellows were with A Company. So it was in such a bad way that they made it, the two companies made one.
Yeah.
And Major Griffin took charge of what was left. So we held Miette, and the two signalers hadn't been hit. They came into where I were, and they said, there's wireless sets, this, with all the running and problem vibration, the gun firing. But my wireless set has happened and kept okay.
Yeah.
So I was in communication with headquarters around the bay. They couldn't come to our assistance because of the shelling was on the road and all the tanks and that knocked out. So we're isolated a mile apart, approximately.
Yes.
So the order came through all that position till I think it was about 6 at night or something.
Yeah.
So I told Major Griffin, all right, but then it came through up through. Hold it until 1 o'clock in the morning. So that was okay. Goes dark, fighting ceased, everything was quiet. Then I could hear this bloody hand car coming down this track.
Yeah.
Rattle, 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 rattle. Who comes highest up to us but a German officer and some soldiers pushing his car out.
Really? Didn't know you were there.
So, of course, we properly snuffed.
Yes.
Had him in.
Yes.
And this officer, he could speak perfect English. I was there, you know. He had been educated at Oxford.
Mm.
You will not win this war. Hitler will know what is coming. He will make it up. A real indoctrinated bastard. Mm. That's what he was. So we captured him and we captured someone else. He was there till 1 o'clock. And then the guns opened up. And 71st Infantry Brigade went round on our left flank. We took Miette. We held Miette. So everything we went for, we took.
Yep.
But then the brigade came down in front of us and he pulled us out.
Yeah, those two places, Noron-le-Bay and Miette. Noron-le-Bay, from my knowledge, you would term it as a small village.
Yeah.
And Miette is just a hamlet, really.
That's all it is.
And they're only a few hundred yards almost apart, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah, half a mile.
Yeah, half a mile.
Yeah, I'd say it's half a mile.
Yeah. But it was the scene, it seems, of some very stiff fighting around there.
Yeah, because it's high ground that they held from there onward. And when from there, you're only roughly half a mile or so from Falaise.
Yes.
Because
all this was now August the 15th, about then.
15th.
Sort of time, wasn't it?
About 15th.
Around that time. And the Germans were fighting a retreating battle, weren't they?
They were trying to keep the gap open to get through the Falaise gap.
At Falaise.
So the 7th German had to escape.
Yeah.
So of course they fought like hell.
Yeah, yeah.
And they gave us a right old pasty.
Yeah, yeah.
So when it came to on, we withdrew, and we came down the same way it went down off the road where they'd already not, and walked along down the slope back into
Noron-le-Bay.
Well, to each for the English, we kind of stretch the cases with us, you know.
Yeah.
And he said to him, "This lad here," he said, "he's not moving from you, can't count." I remember.
Yeah.
The dark. So we get back to the bed. We're there all night, dawn come, and we sort some things out. One bloody big explosion there were. And the south blew up.
Mm.
But nobody knows really what happened. It was B Company, and they said that there was either repriming or grenades, Hawkins grenades, what they laid across the road, about as big as that tape recorder.
That's about, say, 9 inches, 10 inches square.
Laid across the road, if any tanks they brought, and also the milk gun grenade that was thrown.
Yeah.
But whatever it was, some said he was eat, some whatever it was anyhow, some stood on the hill, the lot went up, so they were killed there, some men again that I knew. So that was around the bay, we was there for a day or two, and then off we went again.
But not just killed, Tom, really, because, again, that village, Noron-le-Bay, there are people there that remember in that village that incident, aren't there? Some French people that remember after all those years that explosion taking place, and they said something about they were finding people or bits of people in trees for days after that explosion. Yeah.
You see, your mind shut, because if you didn't shut, you know, but if a job to do, then you must do that job.
Hmm.
You know. If you dwell, you'll crack. If you have a job to do, you like to save, if you're aware of it, that's your primary part, and you've got to help in the final attack. I was privileged to have a great part to do with. So from there, we moved on with the skirmishes till we finished in this forest. And it would be then, or would it be then, 20th of August?
About that time.
Yeah. Because back to the other day when the house blew up, from memory, after all these years, it was either 16th or 17th of August. I'm not quite sure which day.
Yeah.
I think it was 17th, I'm not certain. So after they saw their move off, went in this press. It's in English, so it was called, and we're in there with all these trenches to do. So we were there, we were out of the line then, back through it. And they were trying to get breaking out of the Palais Gap then to get to the Seine. So while we was there, with A Company, I was in the Seagull Trench. Well, the sets were closed down, so it was by a line, by telephone. We got it from them, and it lightened. And it leaned over, it pissed down.
Yeah.
All night long.
Yeah.
So, the lad with me, I don't know where Harvey was, but the lad in the trench with me with the telephone, was Richard Lee, we called him Dickie Lee from the Wigan, who got killed after we had got caught. So we were together quite a while in it. So we're in the sea slip trench, and it was coming down in buckets and flashing. So we're tired out after, and we're resting, so we're sleeping in there, and it kept moving through the night. Bit down, we moved this way, we moved that way. Morning came, and dawn broke, when I'm up in the trench, the water's up to here on me.
Well, you're shouting they're up to your neck almost, Tom.
Yeah. And, there's Dickie throwing his head off me, up there on him.
Same up to your neck.
They tell him,